Gloria Scott there with a title track from a seminal 1974 LP, What Am I Gonna Do? And live on the line from Los Angeles, the lady herself, Gloria Scott. Gloria, welcome to England. Welcome to Radio Newark.
Well, thank you. It's so good to be here.
Beautiful. So you were born in the Golden Triangle in Port Arthur in Texas, but moved across to California shortly after, San Francisco?
Yes, I was about 14 when we moved to California.
Right, because
so I don't know that much about Texas, how that goes.
Right. The Golden Triangle I mentioned, I spoke to Arthur Guillory of the Ascots a few weeks ago, and he was telling me how vibrant the music scene was there. But so to go from Port Arthur to San Francisco, there was a vibrant scene there as well, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah, it was. That's where I met Sly Stone, and he's the one who, the first person to take me in the studio.
Fantastic.
He played at one of our, I was in 11th grade, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
And I had to go to summer school, which was a good thing. And he played at our summer school dance. And a friend of mine said she can sing. And so he invited me up to sing. And then he started taking me around around the Bay Area, different night spots. And that's how I got started singing. He hadn't formed his group, Sly and the Family Stone, yet. That was way before Sly and the Family Stone.
Right. So where did the singing talent come from? Did it run in the family?
My mother... she said that she sang with Sam Cooke.
Oh, wow.
But she got pregnant with my older sister.
Okay.
And she decided that she would get married and have a family instead of going, keeping him. And she had a beautiful voice. I can remember singing, hearing her voice in church. I'd be asleep and then I'd hear her voice. I'd wake up and I'd listen to my mom sing and then I'd go back to sleep.
Oh, bless.
So I must have been pretty young. I wasn't interested in church at that time, but I was interested in singing.
Yeah, absolutely. And to get up on the stage with Sly Stone in the middle of his performance, was that not daunting? Had you performed before publicly? Because you were 14 then, weren't you, or 17?
I was probably about 16.
Right.
And because when he recorded me, I was 17. He recorded a record that was out in the Bay Area. And I remember in Texas, me and my sister were singing with a little group of girls. But the first time I remember, I was in elementary school, and I think I was graduating from the sixth grade to the seventh grade.
Okay.
And my music teacher had me sing this song, a solo, and it was called We Have the Right to Love.
Right.
And I think it was by, I can't remember his name now. Was it Brick Bitten or?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with it.
Somebody like that.
Okay.
But I think there was a flip side of, hear that whistle, it's time to rock. Don't let go. Don't let go. And that's a real oldie. That was back in the 60s.
Wow.
No, it was in the 50s.
50s.
Because we moved to California in 1960.
Okay. Okay, so
yeah, that was way before you were born.
Yes, before I was a
you haven't thought of
no, I want even a twinkle in the milkman's eye then.
Right. I love that, yeah.
Lovely. So you say Sly Stone was the first person to take you into the recording studio. He actually wrote you a track, didn't he, and assembled a group behind you?
Yes, he did. It was Sly, his sister Rose, mm-hmm. and his cousin LaTanya, the Tonettes, and the song was called I Taught Him How to Walk Right.
Great, let's have a listen.
Come on, everybody. Yeah, we're gonna get in a groove. If you'll clap your hands, I'll clap mine too. I've got a story that I wanna tell you. My boyfriend just called and he said that we're through. He said I'm leaving you because I've been a fool too long. And if you don't think I'm leaving, count the days that I'm gone. My baby called me on the phone today. He said, Gloria, stay out of my way. Somebody told me about you messing around. But now I'm gonna have to put you down. But I know,
love is gone.
Yeah,
I know, you never let me go.
And I know,
how to be my man.
Gotta take it,
I'm really prepared.
I taught him how to walk right, talk right. I made him kiss me when he said goodnight. So tomorrow morning, when I wake up, I'm gonna rise and shine.
There's Gloria Scott and the Tonettes with I Taught Him from 1964. Nice tune.
And as a matter of fact, the Baltic Soul Orchestra did that song with me one year.
Right.
And I had to relearn it. They said, Gloria, that's not how the song goes. It goes like this. I said, oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. Because after so many years, I thought, oh, I know that song.
Yeah.
But I had forgotten some of the parts.
I mean, it was a great track. It was a real contemporary feel. It was sort of reminiscent of girl groups like Shirelles, wasn't it? It got picked up by Warner Brothers for distribution.
Yeah, yeah, as a matter of fact. And Bobby Freeman, do you remember Bobby Freeman?
Yeah, Let's Do the Swim.
Yeah. When he heard the song, he told Sly, I want you to write me a song just like that.
Right.
And that's how Bobby Freeman came up with The Swim.
Oh, wow. Oh, is that?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how did you come to part company with Sly then?
How did I what?
Part company with Sly. He cut a track on you, and that was the only track that you did. Was he busy focusing?
I think it was a couple of other ones, too. That one was called Don't Say I Didn't Warn You.
Oh, right.
And I think it was another one. I can't remember recall the name now.
Right.
It was three songs.
Right. Okay.
But only one got released, as far as I know.
Oh, I see. That's a shame. Judging by the measure of the first one, those two sound like lost classics.
Yeah, and there was this. There's a guy. His name is what is his name? He's a photographer. Oh my God! so I'm having a senior moment. But anyway, he took some pictures of me for an album cover.
Okay.
And he presented me with Sly's greatest hits, and two of the songs were on that greatest hits.
Oh, right.
I Caught Him and that other song that I was telling you about. Don't Say I Didn't Warn You.
Right.
So, you know, it's amazing how people can keep up. I didn't have a copy of that. I do now, but I didn't then.
Okay.
And that was way many years ago. I didn't even know he knew about. You know, it surprises me that people know about these songs.
Ah, well, that's it. That's another regular thing that it tends to be that especially the European audience tend to know more about the artist.
I think so. It's amazing.
Mm. Great. I mean, I was talking to Dee Dee. I was talking to Dee Dee Sharp. She came across to the UK to perform a couple of years ago, and I said to her, when you were asked to perform, did you get to choose the tracks you were singing, or were you told what you got to sing? And she said, regrettably, I was told what I got to sing. And one of them, she actually argued with the promoter to say, I don't remember recording that song. And she ended up having to sing it from a score. But he produced the record, and he says, there, that's you. Amazing. But then it is 50 years ago, so, you know, she's got to be forgiven.
Yeah, it is, but that's how it was with Barry. I was fortunate, though, because Barry did have very good taste in music.
Mm.
And I had written some songs, too, but they never really got around to them. But it's okay, because those songs are some of the songs I'm going to be doing.
Excellent.
It's amazing. And he told me once, he said, Gloria, we're not going to do those songs because they're negative songs. And in my young mind, I knew that he had not heard them. He hadn't even listened to them, because if he had, he wouldn't have said that. And, you know, love songs, they were kind of stories that, like kids were, you know?
But then pretty much the whole theme of your, we're jumping forward now, but the whole theme of your What Am I Gonna Do LP is all, they're like wistful songs, and it's a troubled youth and troubled love, isn't it? And here's one such example. Beautiful yet sad record.
You know, it's kind of like that was a statement that he made, but it really makes sense. And I think what the thing was is that he was in control of the music.
Right.
He was going to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it wasn't anything that I could control.
Well,
but I was happy to do it because I loved his music so much. And at that time, I was a very young spirit. I didn't know. You know, I didn't, like, I'm very choicy now about it, and not choicy, but...
The thing is, you just got to put your trust in him.
I have my mind about what I want to do.
Yeah, yeah. So
easier to mold me at that.
Yeah. After your recording with Sly, you ended up being an Iket.
I was an Iket. After Sly recorded that record on me, I was 18 when I met Ike and Tina Turner.
Yeah. So tell me about that night, because you auditioned for them. And you made such an impression. They put you on the plane that night, didn't they?
No, they wasn't on the plane. My parents were living in Santa Cruz at that time, and the audition was at the Fillmore Auditorium.
Okay.
And they took me. I don't know how I got to the audition, but after the audition, I was able to get a ride with. They took me to L.A. in the big black Cadillac limousine, and they drove me by my mom's house in Santa Cruz and said they wanted to take me to L.A. with them. And I remember saying, "Bye, Mama."
I bet your mum was having kittens, wasn't she?
Pardon me?
I say, I bet your mum was having kittens waving you off in a car with Ike Turner.
Yeah, she had no idea what she was doing.
I bet. So tell me about working with Ike and Tina Turner.
It was yin and yang about that. The working with them was really good experience.
Yeah.
It was hard working with Ike because he was kind of, you know, he got worse after I left, I think. But
right.
but it was, we used to have conflicts all the time. And people would say, why do I always talk back to Ike, you know? And it was, it's because, I was just the kind of person that said, you can't tell me what to do. You can't tell me what to do. And I probably should have been listening, but, you know, how teenagers are.
Yeah, yeah. But there's ways. I mean, Tina Turner had a big impression on you, didn't she? She had a lovely way about her.
That was the good part of the whole thing. The good experience, and she really respected me. She let me lead most of the songs. And so that was a compliment for me from her. And years later, I met her after I left the group, and she asked me what I was doing. And at the time, I was working at a grocery store.
All right.
And she told me, you should have your own show. And I was like, oh, wow, you know. And she was right.
Yeah.
She was right.
Yeah, of course.
But I got a lot of good training from them.
I was going to say.
Even Ike.
It must have been a great experience, because it really took you up a level, didn't it, to performing and touring and recording with established artists.
Yes, exactly. And another really good friend of mine who was an ICAT at the time, P.P. Arnold, she was in the group at that time. So, you know, we were coming up artists.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Great training ground. But you left after a bit of a disagreement, didn't he? Didn't he want to charge you for your own flight? Didn't
they? Yeah, because the girls had missed the play. We had a show the night before, and the next day we had to catch a bus to go to Houston, and we missed our bus.
Right.
And so Ike made us pay our way to Houston. Plus, he fined us.
Charming.
And I just said, well, if he's going to do that, I'm not making any money. I might as well go home anyway, because we weren't making that much anyway.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, the original ICATS quit because I was on a Dick Clark tour.
All right, yeah.
And Ike had a different set of ICATS on each Dick Clark show.
Okay.
And I was on one of them, and we were making more money than the original ICATS. And when they heard about it, they quit, and that's when I got chance to be with Ike and Tina Turner's show.
I see. So what did you do with yourself after you left Ike and Tina Turner? What happened then?
Well, you know, there was a lot of things in between. I did local, you know, work with local people, local bands, and I was singing around in the Bay Area and for years and years, and then I moved to L.A. and that's when I met Barry White.
Okay. How did that come about?
I had a songwriting partner.
Right.
And he was a good friend, and he passed many years right after. I think he passed after Barry White did.
Right.
And I was on a tour, and he said, "When you get back in town, I'm gonna introduce you to somebody." And he didn't tell me his name. He just told me. I said, "Okay." And so I went to the office there on Sunset Boulevard, and we were doing some of the songs that he and I wrote, and all of a sudden Barry said, "I'm going to sign you up as an artist," because we were just showing him our songs.
Right.
And that's what he did. He signed me up and recorded me, and that's how we came, how What Am I Going to Do came to be.
Beautiful
and,
album.
I worked with several. I agree.
Because they put you with Tom Brock, writers, didn't they?
Yes, Tom Brock had wrote a lot of the songs.
What a gifted writer!
And he's a good singer. He had his own album out too.
Okay, here's one he co-wrote for you with Looney McLeod.
Loving you every day.
So, I mean, the album was it was the second release on a fledgling label. Casablanca was newly formed, so there was a lot going on. But the
I was on Casablanca before Donna Summer.
Yeah, that's right. Serial number's number two, isn't it, of your LP? So, I mean, you've got a brand new label, lots of energy, but not ever so well organized and marketed.
You know, I think what happened with that was Barry was producing and working with Gene Page and all these people, and all of a sudden, he became an artist.
Yeah.
And it's hard I don't know if I would do that again. It's work with a producer who was also an artist, because especially a performing artist, his career took off so huge. So Gloria Scott just kind of got, you know, sat on the shelf, and he would say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. But I waited 6 years.
Wow.
And when I asked him for a release, he said he was getting ready to do this and that. But I was like, I was scared.
Yeah,
to continue with that. And so I just asked for a release. Yeah. And I was supposed to record 2 albums a year.
That's right. Yeah, for 7 years.
It just was not, it didn't happen.
Such
so
a shame.
I was ready to go.
Yeah.
And I had mixed emotions. Oh, that was so emotional for me. I didn't know what to do.
But you weren't alone, were you? Because his wife suffered the same fate. Wasn't she a singer with Love Unlimited? And,
you know, she did. And I don't know what that, I don't know I think really he, what was behind.
He must have just got so overwhelmed with the volume of work in his own career as it took off that everything else just lost focus. The spinning plates, I suppose.
Yeah, and you know, I can understand how it happened, because he was just such a big personality.
Mm.
It was hard to just sit down on something that big. And so, to be honest about it, if I was in the same position, I probably would have done the same thing if I was as big as he was.
I suppose so.
I can't say that he did the wrong thing. You know, it's just that it wasn't enough for him to go around so much. But I wish Glodeen had stayed in the business, you know, and produced people and, you know, did her thing a little more. And I guess she was satisfied. I didn't see her complaining about what he was doing. And, but she was kind of like, the people in Europe, I went to visit her at their house before they separated.
Yeah.
And, Barry wasn't there. So I had a chance to have a fellowship with her.
Yes.
And she said, you're one of my favorite albums. And she picked up, she had this thick stack of records, and mine was kind of like on top. She just reached in there and grabbed it just like that. And I was like, wow. And it was the second album.
Oh, wow.
It was the second album. She was in love with that song. And one of the songs was, oh, is it really true, boy? Is it really me? And I could hear them singing that song.
Wow.
Because it had that ring to it. Another artist did it too. Danny Pearson. Have you ever heard of him?
I've not, no. No, but I shall look him up afterwards.
Yes, and you can look it up. He sang Is It Really True Boy. He did a good job on it too.
Great.
And
The album, there's honestly not a bad track on the album. It's all gold. But there was only one single released in the US, wasn't there? What Am I Gonna Do? From the LP. There were two further singles released across Europe. One was... Sorry?
I was just thinking about this. I had no idea how popular it was. And I was living in this little bitty island on Guam.
Yeah.
And I was doing this. They had asked me to do this show at this place called The Underground.
Mm-hmm.
And when the guy met me, he said, I know you. He said, I know you. And then the next time I saw him, he gave me this list that had this Hot Old list on it. And my album was, I forget what number it was, but it was on that list.
Wow.
In London.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I knew that my music was being played over there. I thought it was forgotten.
No.
And the internet wasn't quite as popular as it is now, so I didn't know anything about it. And it was A Case of Too Much Love Making was on
Beautiful.
The Hot Old list.
Beautiful. still to this day fills the floor as soon as a needle touches the record. And it was only released in Australia. Only released on 45
See,
in Australia.
I need to be working over there. You know, gigging there.
You definitely do. Right, so tell me about... Sorry, go on.
In Japan, they released my album so many times.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's because it's satisfying a demand. The quality. I mean, the Japanese are absolutely mad for it. They put, you know, the Europeans knocked them into a cock hat. But they keep re-releasing it because it's a constant seller. I hope you're seeing some royalties for it.
Oh my God!
Tongue in cheek.
If I probably wouldn't have any worries right now.
Tongue was firmly in cheek.
Everybody's making money off of my music, except me.
Yeah, that's often the case, isn't it? Tell me about the second album you recorded with H.B. Barnum this time instead of Gene Page.
Yes, I think I'm not sure if Gene Page was because he passed, and I'm not sure why Barry switched producers. Maybe he had become ill,
right.
Not producers, but arrangers. And he did a good job as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the other three songs I mentioned came from.
Great.
From that album. And it would have been a big album too. You know, I know it would have.
Absolutely.
There should be some other ones too that I can't remember were on there because we did a whole album and I only have access to like four songs.
Yeah. So when you say you had to sit out 6 years before you got released from your contract, that meant that you were unable to work for anybody else at the same time, didn't it?
Well, I that's right. I couldn't sign with anybody. I had, you know, one of the producers at Motown had said that he wanted to just do something just to get back at Barry for not doing anything with the album.
Yeah.
But he never did. It was just talk. But in between, that's when I worked with Mary Wilson.
Right.
It was in between those times. I'm not saying putting anything bad against the Supremes or Mary Wilson, but I used to get so bored.
Yeah.
Because I was singing background and I was a lead singer.
Yeah.
So I really, it was really frustrating.
I should think so.
I want to tell her, give me that mic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, there are background singers and there are standout solo singers, and you're much better than a background singer. So it was a travesty to have you back there. But I suppose at least you were working. So is that why you decided to step back from the industry and go to Guam?
Well, you know, I was just kind of frustrated again, not doing anything. And it was just nothing happening for me there. And so I went to Guam and I was working every night. All I did was sing. I didn't have to do a day job. And I stayed there and I got in a little trouble. But, you know, it was okay. It was the best thing that could have happened to me. And that's a whole other story. I won't go too far into that. But
right.
But things are just, you know, work in mysterious ways at times. You never
Absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely. You never know what's around the corner. And around your corner, of course, you got back to recording, didn't you, in the early 90s? Yeah, from 1993, then released on your own label, Glosco Records. This is It's So Wonderful.
Someone like you.
Tell me about It's So Wonderful. How did that come about? Because it's on your own label, your own recording label.
It's So Wonderful. Let me tell you about that song. That was written when I was in L.A. with Barry White Company.
Oh, yeah.
That's how old that song is. And I wrote that, the music and the lyrics. And I was so proud of that song. I still am.
Yeah.
And that was one of the songs I had submitted to Barry. So, you know. And there was another. What was the other song that was? Any more songs that came out in Europe that I didn't know about?
that was That's the Way Love Is on German Said Soul Records. That was 2010, a little bit later.
Oh, that was with Baltic Soul Orchestra. That was one of the songs that they wanted me to kind of recreate, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you become a regular at Baltic Soul, haven't you? You've appeared there several times for the Weekender.
I have. The Weekender was my 11th year this year.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And
that's really amazing because it's so many people come up, you know, everybody's different on that show every year.
Well, that's right.
And I've been there 11 times. I'm the only one that gets to come back at time after time.
And that's what I was going to say. There's a lot of Weekenders, especially in the UK. I was at Cleethorpes this weekend and I'm off to Blackpool next weekend. And there's like a rotation of artists. You don't get to see the same artist at the same venue twice. But they keep asking you back because you keep pulling in the crowds. So that's what sets you apart. You should be very proud.
You know, I think it's just because, you know, I don't know. It's a blessing.
Great stuff. And singing is not the only one of your talents, is it? Because you're also quite arty, aren't you? The jewellery. Tell me about your jewellery making.
I love it. That was one of the stories I didn't want to get into.
Oh, right, okay.
But, you know, it that was a blessing also.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and actually it's my testimony. I had gotten involved with some drugs.
Right.
And God whispered in my ear that if I didn't leave it alone, it was going to kill me.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that was the voice of God. And when they said, well, you still have to pay the consequences. So, sometimes I don't like telling the story, but it comes out anyway, because it's like you can't skip over some things that are important in your life.
And also it's a bit therapeutic as well, isn't it?
Yes, and that's cleansing. What that was for me. I used to dream about beads. And I had no idea why I was dreaming about beads. And I woke up one morning after a dream. I went downtown to the garment district, and there was a bead store. And I went, I was like, wow, look at all these pretty beads. And I started buying beads, but I didn't know how to start or stop, you know, end it. So when I got in trouble, that's when I learned how to, how to make beautiful pieces of jewelry. And I made bags for the ladies who were going home and that needed, you know, bags to go to the, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was just a blessing. And I'm still, you know, I wanted to take more steps to me with me on this trip to Bali, not Bali, but Baltic Soul, but yeah. I wasn't able to. So that's another thing I'm working on is getting my stuff online and letting people see what beautiful things can come out of being.
Yeah, absolutely.
Being, you know, just sat down so God can speak through you and to you.
It's just another channel for your creativity, isn't it? Like your songwriting.
Pardon me?
I say it's another channel for your creativity.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a chain reaction. Being creative is kind of like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's ongoing.
And here's one such example of your creativity. You co-wrote this song along with Bob Relf and Tom Brock. This is Help Me Get Off This Merry-Go-Round.
This merry-go-round.
Like your song, are you still writing songs? Are you still writing songs?
Yeah, I am. I have a song that I'm working on right now that I can't figure out if it's a gospel song or a love song.
All right, why not make it both?
But it's really cute. It's a really beautiful song. Mm-hmm.
Great. Have you got a label for that? Is it going to come out on your own label, or are you putting it through?
I'm gonna present it to Andrew, and hopefully we can work on it when I get there too. So we're collaborating on some stuff now.
Great stuff. Excellent. Yeah. Because when you said when you come, of course that's going to be your performance on October the 11th at the 100 Club, the legendary 100 Club. This is going to be your first.
Oh my God!
This is your first. I mean, everybody's heard of the Cavern in Liverpool. Yeah, the 100 Club in London is the place to be. And so what a venue to come to for your very first appearance in the UK.
Oh my God, after all these years.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's an absolute dump, but it's an iconic venue.
Oh, isn't it? That's okay. A popular dump, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're really looking forward to it then?
I am. I really am.
Fantastic.
I'm so looking forward to it.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you as well. So, Gloria, I've got my ticket. I'm going to come down and say hello on the night. I'm really looking forward to meeting you.
Oh, please.
And thank you very much for giving me the interview this evening. I wish you all the very best.
Yes.
And remember,
I hope I didn't talk too much.
No, not at all. But remember, nice things happen to nice people, and it's going to be great.
Thank you, and thank you, Sue. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Bye-bye.
Bye. So I'm going to play out now with the 45 that was issued to promote the album that never saw the light of day but is about to be released. This is a beautiful tune called Just As Long As We're Together. And don't forget, tickets for Gloria Scott's forthcoming appearance at the 100 Club in London on Oxford Street on the 9th of October are available now from agmp.co.uk or direct from ctickets.com. Get in quick before they're all gone.
Yeah. your smile.